You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today, we're meeting the two men running for mayor of Southport. Southport is a 225-year-old city that spans less than 4 square miles and sits near the confluence of the Cape Fear River and the Atlantic Ocean in Brunswick County. It was voted America's happiest seaside town by Coastal Living in 2015. In 2010, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, Southport's population was slightly more than 2,800. Today, the Bureau estimates it's home to about 3,600 people. In 2015, the last municipal election year in North Carolina, Jerry Dove ran against Joe Pat Hatem. Jerry Dove won the seat by 79 votes, or a difference of about 7%. If ever you wondered whether your vote counts, here's a clear example of when it absolutely does. And joining us now is Mayor Jerry Dove completing his term and seeking a second. Before serving as Southport's mayor, Jerry Dove spent 12 years as chief of police in Southport. That is in addition to the 9 years he spent as an officer, shift supervisor, and canine handler. He worked as a master trooper with the North Carolina State Highway Patrol for 26 years. He has served in the U.S. Army Reserve and the United States Air Force. And in 2007, Jerry Dove was awarded the Order of the Longleaf Pine. Jerry Dove, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you for having me here today.
You can ask your own question of our candidate on this live Wednesday edition by emailing us at coastline@whqr.org or giving us a call at 910-343-1138. Mayor Jerry Dove, so many people identify Southport's next big nut to crack as finding that balance between forward motion, progress, and maintaining that small town Southport ethos that makes it such a charming place to live in the first place. How do you see Southport moving forward? What's the long-term vision?
Well, you know, I've always said that Southport is kind of a city where the past and the present meet one another. And so many people in town, they say, I wish we could go back 30 or 40 years. So do I. I've been there 37 years. And I wish we could go back to those times. But, you know, progress is going to take its place. But there's one thing that we can hold on to, and that's the spirit of Southport, the traditional neighborhoods, the friendliness of our people. That's what keeps drawing people there. It keeps drawing them there, and that's why we have experienced this growth in our city over these many years. Not only that, it's because of our people, what they seek, our recreational facilities, all of the amenities that we have to offer, the beauty of our city, and all of those things.
And now that Southport has attracted so much attention, and certainly in 2015 when it was the happiest seaside, I'm not sure what that designation exactly was, but by Coastal Living, the happiest seaside city or something, what kind of controls need to go in that perhaps haven't been there before to make sure that Southport maintains its character?
Well, we are looking forward to our vision for the future, and the board has worked on this problem here. Number one, with all the influx of the new people that have arrived, I'm going to give you an example. When I came to Southport that many years ago, our population down there was only about 1,200 people. And now you can see how many we've expanded here, over 3,000. And then during tourist seasons and summertime and recreational seasons, we have a lot more people come in than that. Now, what has that done? That has taxed our infrastructure, and we must plan for that. Number one, our transportation, our highway system. And the city is working closely with the DOT to provide those roadways and sidewalks necessary to transport our people. The other thing, too, that draws people to Southport is the age-old thing that draws all people to cities to begin with. Number one, for necessities, for conveniences, for things like water and sewer, which we must maintain for them, for water, for safety reasons, for our police departments, for our fire departments, our rescue squads. And we're fortunate we have a hospital in our city. And all of those things kind of draw people there. And we must prepare for that.
If you are reelected, will this administration, this next administration, begin work on a strategic vision, on a long-term plan for Southport, and why has it taken this long to start talking about one?
Well, we do have a strategic plan for Southport. We do have that one. It's been in place for many years. As a matter of fact, I looked at it with the planning director yesterday before I came up here, and it is a vision that we maintain what we have there, that traditional small-town charm, and also prepare for the growth that we expect to provide to all these citizens.
When was that plan first published?
I can't tell you the exact date, but it's been in place there ever since I've worked for the city. So.
There is no clear tree preservation guideline right now in the city of Southport's Unified Development Ordinance, although there are tree protections, which are not part of that. And according to the Stateport pilot, a Southport Forestry Committee recently submitted a text amendment to the board that would require a number of things. Developers and builders would have to submit a tree plan for approval, would require greater protections for heritage trees, some of those spectacular live oaks that people love about Southport. What do you think needs to change about the current ordinance?
I'm number one, I'm all for tree preservations. I love that. That's part of the beauty and the uniqueness of our city to begin with. My wife told me not to quote any poems that I learned in the seventh grade, but I'm going to quote Robert Louis Stevenson, who said that the uniqueness of a tree, that it emanates fresh water, is a bountiful to a weary spirit. And that's so true, those words. It's part of our uniqueness. And not only that, it's part of our natural resources down there. A lot of people don't realize this. Yeah, we look at a tree, and we need to preserve that for future generations. Not only that, but not only for the beauty of the tree, but it also does a lot of things that we don't think about. Stormwater drain off, it helps with that. It helps conserve energy. It helps shade our streets. And I didn't even know this for a long time, but it helps prevent maintenance on our highways. By shading the areas and covering our roadways coming into town. And not only that, it provides shelter for our wildlife, too. Not only that, but building materials for our homes. So I'm all for that, and I'm glad that we're moving ahead on that.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. With us now, answering your questions, is Jerry Dove. He is the current mayor of Southport, seeking his second term. You can ask your own question during this live Wednesday edition by calling us at 910-343-1138 or sending an email to coastline@whqr.org. Mayor Jerry Dove, are you a poetry fan?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Not what one would might expect from a longtime police officer, police chief, and state trooper. If you win your mayoral seat again,
yes, ma'am.
Where do you see the electrical grid going? Does it make sense to keep it under the auspices, the control of the city of Southport, or should this eventually get passed over to a larger entity?
No. I remember when we were in the electrical business, and it's more economical. Savings to our taxpayers and our citizens, plus better service to do what we're doing with it now, and that's contracting with Brunswick Electric. Now, we do have some plans to place some of our electrical lines underground. This is going to help us, especially during storms. And one of the reasons that I say that is because when we did have our electrical system, or we had our electric department, I should say, managed by the city of Southport, we only had about three or four members of that. And you can see when we have outages, and we have storms down there, not only hurricanes, but we have tropical storms that will knock the power out. And if you only have three or four people working on it, it would take weeks at a time, and that's happened before. Now, since we have been with Brunswick Electric, that time has been cut way down. I think the last time we were out, I was out the longest. I was out for 10 hours, but they have corrected that problem near my home.
And what is the timeline then on burying those power lines?
Well, that's part of our overall long-range plans for that. There's no time limit.
And so when could citizens of Southport expect to see
that? Well, we have started that now. We have started that. There has been some lines buried in and around Bay Street, and on near Howe, near the old courthouse, too. And we have started the program. But, you know, it's like anything else. There's a cost with that, and there's other things, too, that we have to provide for our citizens to work.
And so when you talk about balancing the needs and the costs, and you think about Southport's budget, are there places that Southport could cut back on spending? Are there places where you think the city maybe spends too much?
Well, now, like I said, now, remember that why people move to cities. They expect certain things. They expect protection. That's why we move to cities. You know, there's strength in numbers. We feel safe. We have an excellent police department there. Of course, that's a pretty high budget. I was in the police department there. I know that. We have an excellent fire department to provide all these services. And the cost benefit to our citizens, you can't put a price tag on that. The fire department, we have one of the most professional fire departments. The chief, we just promoted him to fire chief last year, and he's doing an excellent job down there, him and the assistant chiefs. And we're also, with his training and experience and what he's done with that department, has decreased our insurance costs. So it's actually a benefit. You see costs that we could possibly reduce. Well, we're working on that, too. We have our long-range goal is that our fund balance is going to be increased in the next 3 years by 30%. We're doing rate studies to see if we can maybe perhaps lower some of the rates that we charge our citizens. And we're implementing some new billing procedures, too, that's going to cut costs.
When we think about the recent news about the unregulated and potentially toxic chemical compounds in the Cape Fear River, which supplies drinking water for thousands of people in southeastern North Carolina, how do you see that as potentially impacting Southport? And does that make you think any differently about planning for the future in terms of Southport's water supply?
Well, our environment is certainly a concern, not only mine, but everyone else around us. We want it safe for our citizens and for future generations. I do get reports every day about the Gen X situation. Everybody's concerned about that. And we also had a concern about some recent fly ash that was released at one of our power plants, Capital Power. And we've been dealing with that to see if that's toxic. Yes, we're concerned with that. But we have to realize, too, that we're an industrial nation, too. And all these comforts and conveniences we've got, sometimes we have to pay a price. But we hope that those folks that are in that the industrial part of our society use good judgment and really help us out on making everything safe. And we depend a lot, too, on our environmental people to tell us, you know, that if anything is dangerous to our health and hazardous. The other thing, too, is that we have our own water department, and they do checks and balances on our water system to make sure that it is safe for our people.
And, of course, they're checking to see if the water supply is in compliance with current regulations.
Yes.
Probably state and federal regulations. Part of the issue surrounding these toxic chemical compounds is that there are no guidelines or regulations around them.
Yes, ma'am.
Is that something that gives you concern?
It does. It does that. But, you know, we place a lot of trust in our people that monitor all that, and hopefully that they're going to make it safe for all of us here.
We had a caller ask, what progress have you made in attracting grant writers, nonprofit foundations, state and federal legislators in an effort to obtain $3 to $4 million in funding to move forward with the Southport Waterfront Project? The caller says it cost the city and taxpayers about $180,000. Work was completed in 2014, and no one is doing anything.
I don't understand that. We've just completed some work on the waterfront down there. We had some damage during Hurricane Matthew, and that has been almost completed, the work done on that. And I was down there today. It was looking real good. And there's still a little bit of work done that they need to do on that down there, but it's taking shape. Our waterfront is one of our greatest attractions, and we're working on that. We've just got a new city manager that has some good ideas, too, about that, and he's working on some of those grants and concept. Now, that concept, too, you have to realize that when they put that in effect, that's what it was a concept. And it's not etched in stone, so we're going to kind of use that as kind of a format to proceed forward with that.
And then briefly, Southport officials, of course, were hoping the state legislature would pass a bill that allows municipalities in Brunswick County to charge an additional tax up to 0.5% on prepared food and beverages.
Yes, ma'am.
to fund erosion mitigation. Right now, the bill sits in a finance committee. What could you do as mayor to keep things moving in Raleigh?
Well, actually, we're planning a trip to down there at the end of this month to talk with our representatives about that and some other things, too. So that's what we're going to do with that.
And that's this edition of Coastline. Jerry Dove, thank you so much for
being
with
us. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Joe Pat Hatem, thanks also for being with us, and Karen Mosteller. Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Associate producer is Rachel Keith. Production assistant is Caitlin Hanrahan. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org. Get the podcast or find it on the WHQR app. Tune in for the rebroadcast of this episode Sunday afternoon at 3. And join us for Coastline Live Wednesdays and Thursdays at noon here on HQR News 91.3 and 98.9 FM. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.